Ben, you would not read about it. 2 weeks in a row, we're sitting down and we're chatting, and it's great to see your smiling face again, my friend, albeit virtually.
The Magoos. The Magoos. The Magoos. Magoos.
Well, virtually, and people won't be able to see it, but I am smiling because
I can see it, and that's what's most important to me.
That is absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think whatever is important to you is important to me, and it's the, although this will be released, you know, a day or so later, but it is the 1st of September. We're into spring.
Has sprung.
And you wouldn't believe it, actually. Well, guess what happened to me this morning on my walk? You wouldn't be able to write this. The first day of spring.
You either got swooped by a bird or you've, like me, been dealt a chronic dose of hay fever at the very start of spring and your eyes are about to explode.
I can confirm happily as well because of what you've just explained. It is the former. I got swooped on my walk this morning. It wasn't the perfect swoop. It wasn't from a magpie. It was one of those fucking little miners. Sorry about swearing there, but
swearing earlier. It's actually on my bucket list to punch a bird out of midair.
Yeah, well, make sure it's a miner because they just kept coming back.
Yeah,
I literally shook my my fist at it. Like the second I could see it coming, and I had my fist out, and I can tell you now, listeners at home, putting your fist out does nothing.
Okay, so do you think you'll like walk the same route again and you'll go back with like maybe some pot cleaners on your hat or something? Or?
No, I walked back. It was at the start of the walk and I have to come back that way because I was walking with Molly and she had an encounter with a magpie last year and it's actually given her a little bit of PTSD. She's very mindful of where the birds are always at. And we were walking back the same way. And she wanted to go around. I'm like, what are you doing? Our car's this way. And she's like, no, that's where the bird swoop is. I hadn't given it a second thought. But clearly it's people.
Yeah, birds are no good. Birds are...
What, flat out?
Bottom of the barrel for mine. Yeah, I can't have them. I can't trust them.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's just... I'm hearing a couple of
Rosellas or something in the background of your house. It's a lovely area for it. And you're not
I'm medium to high afraid of birds.
What kind of threshold are we talking? Like how high on the medium scale?
I just don't have any trust in them. Like, I mean, I don't like cats either, but I can trust them a little bit. Like, but I just feel like, yeah, birds don't speak, I was gonna say don't speak English. Obviously they don't speak English, but I just feel like they're not, you can't reason with a bird. There's nothing that you can do that, will sort of appease them other than them flying into your head. Because that's not rational. That's not rational behaviour from a bird. You wouldn't expect.
So the way you rate animals is based on rational behaviour.
Yeah, and that's why I'm thrilled to have our dog lying down here. You know, quite patient, and that's rational. But I mean, when someone knocks on the door, she loses her mind completely. That's not rational behaviour, but she only does that when she's triggered. Birds have just got no idea. Birds are uneducated. But one thing before we go too far down the rabbit hole of birds, I have noticed something, Ben. It looks like, as I can see your Zoom background there, that I'm not sure if you're in a spare room or in the master bedroom, but we share the same bed frame.
Really?
Yes, that's my old bed, which didn't make it to the master here when we moved.
Interesting. Molly's old bed, also not in the master bedroom. I am in the spare room. So
it's
similar spare taste, room. But we also don't like the same bed frames.
Spare room bed frame is the one.
I'm more of a, you know, the one that the mattress just sits on top of, not an actual bedhead.
Oh, right, no bedhead itself.
Yeah, middle of the night, I don't want to be walking into any timber. I've got some long limbs. I don't want to be stubbing my toes.
Walking into corners and stuff, yeah. That was on the first night when we moved in. I was pretty gung-ho on putting the bed together that night. Like, we didn't get in until like 5:30 and it was July, so it was pretty dark early. Yeah. And, you know, like it took us 3.5 to 4 hours to put the bed together. You've never seen more instructions in a flat pack in your entire life. And it creaks at the moment. Like every time you move and get in and get out, it makes a hell of a noise.
Are you a handyman, Jake? Like just around the house? Nah.
Nah. Like I really would like to be. I really got into the flat packs in the end and I started to feel confident, but I definitely would not be in the handy category.
So are you
got a lot of nice friends who help me out with things.
As do I. I'm not obviously trading myself either, but I do throw the tools around the backyard every now and then myself, just because I want to try and get it a little bit better. But how does Rach find that? Because you've got lockdowns obviously is one thing, but then she's also dating a bloke who can't do anything. Can't even put a flat pack together within a reasonable amount of time.
I feel like she knows what she signed up for and that, but, you know, for instance, recently we had our backyard completely revamped and a nice new deck built and our good friends at Johnson Home and Carpentry sorted us out. So through my connections, we're able to get. So what I'm bringing to the table is seemingly a network of people and who will help us and deliver what we want. So, yes, we still have to pay for that and I can't do it myself, but... Yeah. I feel like they're very small things I can do, but outside of that, I'm very useless.
So you're really like an Italian dad. You've got a guy for everything.
I'd rather something done right. I wish I could have paid for someone to put the bed together, to be honest, because I know at some point that will just come crashing down. And
so what do you bring to the table at home, that if you don't mind my asking?
It's a good question. I like the idea of being neat and tidy.
Okay. That goes a long way.
Just the idea of it. I don't often... I have learned a lot, in fairness. I have learned a lot in the last 6 weeks and maturing pretty quickly. I like the idea of thinking that I can improve.
Of course.
And it's baby steps, but I think that, we'd like to split several of the tasks pretty 50-50. And I mean, we're home so much anyway, as everybody is. We're home a lot, so but one thing we are when we're home a lot is that we do watch a little bit of TV. And after last week, I had a few messages just about the Space Jam review, and people like, oh, there's another side to you boys, it's not just footy, it's not just sport, whatever. And I've actually going to bring to the table another television recommendation. And it's for people who have Disney, and it's only been out for a day or two. And Ben, I was
hot off the press
when we watched the trailer, because I'd seen an ad for it, and I said to Rach, "Do you want to watch this? Let's watch it." And I had it up on the TV, and I couldn't get the trailer on Disney. Drove me mad for about 10 minutes. But then then I just YouTubed it and was watching.
Disney came with a flat pack, did it?
10 seconds. Oh my god! Might as well have. And we watched the trailer, and Rach was keen to watch it. And so they've released 3 episodes now, and then it's every Monday 1 episode until 10 episodes are complete. So we'll hopefully see us through the majority of the lockdown, but once a week's not really a deal.
Suspense is killing me.
On Disney, it's called Only Murders in the Building. And it is Steve Martin.
Steve Martin. Oh, someone's at the door.
Yeah, the dog's barking, which we love. I think it just might be Uber Eats for next door. This is I'm going to have to mute myself and tell it a short
show. Whilst Jake's on mute, I haven't seen the show, but I'm guessing it might have a thing or two to do with perhaps murders, but more specifically murders that take place within the confined structures of a building. I don't know if that's a house, if it's an apartment, if the specific dimensions of the building.
I think I've calmed the dog. It's a Steve Martin, so he stars Love in Steve it Martin. And he wrote it.
Yeah.
And the dark humour and the, like, it's like a murder mystery with dark humour, with serious parts. It's just, it's very, very well made, very well put together. It's something that I thought that you would like when I was watching, but I also thought to myself, which is, shows how unoccupied my head is at the moment, that Daniel O'Kelly will like this, a mutual friend of yours and mine.
Yeah, big fan of the show.
Yeah, I feel like I was watching it and I thought, do you reckon Oaks could like this?
Yeah.
Which is strange to have not spoken to him in a little while and don't really frequent conversations or swap recommendations with him. But it's just Selena Gomez is in it. Martin Short, I think, is the other guy.
So Steve Martin and Martin Short, they together go way, way, way back.
Yeah, it's
great. They are great together.
It's very good. Like, I've only watched two episodes. We've got one more to watch, and then it's the weekly sort of stint. But
I've just got the feeling
that it's like one of those shows you can watch on surface level and just sort of breeze through it, and you'll get what you need to get. Or you can watch it quite in depth, and there'll be a whole lot of other little things. So it feels like it's not anywhere near the same as Game of Thrones, but like that sort of level where it's like, gee, there's a lot of stuff that you missed, and it adds to the depth if you understand it. But there's also that storyline that sits at a certain level of understanding, which is going to be good. So production through the roof. First two episodes have been great. I'm spilling, I sort of can't binge it, to be honest, but good things come to those who wait. So I'm going to assume that over the next 7 weeks, it'll be.
Yeah.
We'll be enjoying that. So if you do watch this show, any shows, flick it through to us, get on our Instagram, drop us a direct message, because we do other things other than watch footy.
I shouldn't admit this out loud, but I haven't actually watched that much football this season, but
maybe you're like Essendon's reverse lucky charm.
Yeah, well, we can get into that, but I watched the couple of games that I want to watch, like the ones that I think are going to be good. And then I don't watch the ones that I don't think are going to be any good. And
I mean, it makes sense.
There's been peaks and troughs this year with the rule changes and just the adaption and other little things, like I guess the word spirit you could throw in there. But we don't have to get into that right this second. But that's a great recommendation. I'm guessing so dark comedy basically, but it's got elements of some really nice writing in there as well.
And Rach even said it to me last night. There's a lot of motifs throughout which was a very, like, I mean, you know, you and I are media men and have studied in different areas, and wasn't something I'd heard Rach say before, the old motifs, but she's a very well-read individual. So
I'd imagine dating yourself, because you're quite, your vocabulary is pretty good. You speak very well. I'd imagine that she might have a thesaurus just under the pillow, just looking up.
I'm a very basic sort of guy.
You're a basic guy, but you're a bit like, I guess you're a bit like this show that you're talking about. You know, people can get what they want from you, but you sit here for long enough and you think, hang on, Jack, you've got some pretty interesting thoughts.
And no one's ever followed up or told me that, so I'm going to assume that they're just internalizing it. But before you then, so we'll start and we'll go to you, because at what point on Sunday afternoon, and we've obviously probably been in the first half, did you think it's happening? We're going to do it. The count's going to go back to zero. Like, there was a moment in your head, which I'm sure that it was like, today's the day. And when was it?
The past, just to preface, the past probably 2 months, I have, because we're all at home and you're when you're scrolling on your phone and stuff like that and you're half watching things, you're not really fully invested. The past 2 months, whenever Essendon's on in particular, I will put my phone in another room and I will actually just really, really consume myself into the game. And it scares the death out of Molly. She's not a footy fan at all, and she didn't know she had this in me, this side. But on Sunday, because I just don't want to get sucked into, you know, Twitter and my mates getting into me, all that sort of stuff, or like, you know, that sort of, because you're on a different level when you're watching your own team, and something that I don't necessarily like about myself, but but it's true. It's something that I like to let loose and get a bit nuff. But
it's okay.
Yeah, I'm surprised the neighbours didn't make a couple of calls. On Sunday, but geez, it was probably halfway through probably the second quarter, and it wasn't like it was like I entertained the thought, but then I also had that inner voice straight away is like, shut up, no. As an Essendon supporter especially, you do not talk until the siren's gone and they've confirmed that you've actually got the four points because you're just never too sure. There was a moment of it. I thought up until half time we were up for the challenge. We really were. And going back to what I said last week, even I still had the thought that even if we lose today, like it will, I'll be proud of the group and that sort of thing. And then, boy, did that just sort of change over the next hour and a half.
I mean, I can sympathise with the point of, you know, like we've overachieved. And it's even the point Matthew Lloyd's been making for about a month is that, like, well, he doesn't think Essendon are necessarily better than St Kilda, Fremantle, Carlton, and they've made the finals. So now next year, they'll pile. There's no way Essendon make the finals next year, okay? I'll promise you that now. There's no way they make the finals next year.
Okay, I'd be happy to wager that.
I just can't see it happening. And they've done really, really well this year. And they have exceeded expectations, which is fine. But in a really even comp, the thing is you've got to strike while the iron's hot. I mean, Essendon are obviously never going to win the flag. But, it's just I'm not sold on – they've obviously, you know, from where they were 12 months ago, it's a completely different club almost, which is absolute credit to them. But, I just think they will now bring, and you always want to, like, don't get me wrong, it's not like, oh, I'd rather finish 11th, then maybe next year we get a bit better. And
then you spring that's up.
That's not what you want to do by any means. But I just think that, you know, they did so well to get there. And then when they got there, I think they found out that they were short of the mark. And whereas I feel like if the Bulldogs played St Kilda, for instance, and I mean, it was down in Tassie and it was wet and windy. So, I mean, it wasn't really conditions that, really should suit anyone. But,
still outclassed in the end.
By a group that just isn't ready to play finals. And they will be, and they will be good. Don't worry about that. But I'm really impressed with the way that Rutten and even Dyson Heppel, I think has sort of, you know, like I remember talking to someone earlier in the year and just being like, Dyson Heppel, like, how does he get in the side? How does he, you know, like, how is he captain of this team? I couldn't see him playing in the team. I think Andy McGrath is a really good player, and obviously he hurt himself. And I think pretty highly of Merritt. Now Parrish is literally in the top 5 to 10 midfielders in the comp. And the way Heppel's reinvented himself and seemingly, it just looked like potentially Worsfold and him were very, very different people. I don't think John Worsfold cared at all either, mind you, but about anything or anyone. It is a credit to them. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where it all lands because you may then also find yourselves as a destination club and, you know, you might be able to pick up. I mean, I know the list is probably pretty settled and the salary cap's probably, I can't see anything that you probably desperately need. They're talking, though, about making a big play for Ben King from the Suns, which would be huge. I think that's the end of next season. And then Marvio Chole this year as well has been rumoured. So they're obviously still looking to sort of top up their tools with Kale Hooker not going to be there next year. And was he still the leading goal kicker in the end? Probably touch and go, I guess.
Stringer ended up taking over.
Stringer,
or maybe even Tipper. They were all pretty close. Like it was all a good joint effort, which is what you want to see as well. But I definitely see your point. I think there's still a genuine tall forward like a Ben King away from it, and I do think Harry Jones showed some really, really, really good promise this year. And he's obviously got a couple of stress fractures and some issues, but it does, he's already gone in for surgery on his foot, but it did sound like that was more like a, let's do this now so it's not worse later on. But I think he is the actual answer, but then you obviously need a half forward or slash full forward to go with him as well. And Peter Wright's been an incredible pickup, but does he take it from 8 to 6-5 even?
He's just, he's not going to be the one, is he? Like, I mean, he's a really good second ruck slash, you know, third or fourth forward, isn't he? But he's unfortunately, for whatever reason, he can't be the main man.
He's just not versatile enough, I don't think. But knock on him. He's done an amazing job.
And he's been a good find by Essendon because, at the end of last year, it was like, oh, okay, let's see where this goes. So the Bombers were obviously beaten by the Dogs, and the the finals sort of continues to take a little bit of shape. So Geelong lost to Port Adelaide, who were super impressive. Melbourne beat the Lions. And again, Melbourne, very good. I'm not critical of Melbourne because they're a good side. I think I'm probably just more jealous than anything. They were very, very good. Will be hard to beat, I think, overall. I'm still with the Cats because against the Giants this week, they'll whack them.
Thanks to Jared Waitley's efforts. Go on.
I quite liked it. It was a great game, GWS Sydney.
It was a fantastic game, wasn't it?
And I like watching the Giants, and they're sort of, I don't know, it's gone from a team that everyone was sort of like, gee, look at all the top-end talent, like, of course they're going to win it. And then now it's like they're this underdog that, because people have left and, you know, they've still been able to keep competitive and keep rejuvenating on the run.
They still have a lot of talent.
Oh, yeah, shitloads.
And even people like Jesse Hogan just going, hang on a minute, I forgot that this guy actually was a bloody good forward.
Yeah, was a superstar and a pick one and all those sort of things. So I just think Geelong's first week of finals record was terrible, but they usually do bounce back. So,
they do back it up. The likes of Paddy's come out and said that he's a bit sore and playing in through a couple of injuries. I think it might have been Kane Corns or somebody during the week just talking about perhaps that he puts a bit too much pressure on himself about being the Superman and wearing that cape all the time, where it's like, if you do your job and you just think that everyone else is going to do their job, then you guys will win the game. And I actually really saw those points, because I know it could be just like a flash in the pan because of the way they lost on the weekend, but it looked like they're really, after they're superstars and they have a lot of them, their tail end really, really drops off. And that's why I don't think they can win the flag, but you're obviously still on them.
Yeah, because I see that across the competition, to be honest. I see it.
Really? I
see it in the Ds, but I think that their bottom six perform more. Like, I can see the day when they don't. I don't have the utmost trust in their bottom six, for instance. Yeah. Whereas, like, when Richmond were good, you know, in the years gone by, you're like, well, that guy will come on. And, like, I didn't rate him a couple of years ago, but he'll come on and he'll get six touches or he'll kick a goal or whatever it is. Or Jack Graham will do all the hard tackling and the clearance stuff. Like, that guy will do that now. Like, whereas Melbourne, I think I'm still in, and I think they're still in that, like, phase of, like, well, you've got to keep doing it for a little bit more before I trust that you'll do it. Absolutely. And Port Adelaide are the same. Like, Geelong, you're absolutely right. Like, because when some of those guys were exposed on Friday night, you know, it looked like the whole world was going to end for the Cats. It's been an interesting discussion this week too around their coach, and we'll obviously touch on coaches a little bit later. But, you know, people pretty, you know, like, watching Footy Classified the other night, pretty, like, concerned or, like, vocal that Chris Scott would be either look to be moved on or to move on if, because they've obviously gone chips in the Cats and they are a very old list and they don't seemingly have too much beneath, you know, that core of, and I mean, even the sell for Jeremy Cameron, you know, who signed there, and he'll be, I guess, age wise, probably the last one standing out of, I guess, that group of Dangerfield, Salwood, Hawkins, Smith, you know, Higgins, these guys.
That, so you're talking that like three years.
Well, I mean, yeah, two potentially.
They just keep going Hawkins around, don't they? Footy, yeah. Hawkins is playing very good footy, yeah.
And they certainly haven't dropped off, but it could be, like, I guess the worry would be, what if it all ends at once? Like,
you feel like it'd only take one off season when they're not a destination club, and then the wheels could just, you know, get a bit wobbly. I'm not saying falling off, because I know Rudy listens to the show and he'll be like, what are you boys talking about? We'll be good forever.
And like, I mean, then does the cycle just continue? You know, you then, that I'm sure that they've got long-term plans where they say when the Dangerfield, so Lord Hawkins and Smith money comes up, then, you know, they go back to the well and, you know, they offer a player like Darcy Parrish, who's a Geelong Falcons. And they're always going to have Falcons boys they can get. They're always going to, you know, like, have that draw, I think, of playing in Victoria, but playing out of town and those sort of things. So They might just be forever. I mean, they have been very competitive for a very long time, so you probably wouldn't blame them if they bottomed out, but I just don't see that organisation doing that. A little bit like the Swans, but yeah, I mean, it's at some stage it does sort of catch up with everyone. So that will be interesting. So in terms of the winners, Ben, I know that you have a very important phone call that you'd like to make, and you did miss a call earlier today, and you messaged me and you said, look, I want to just ring this person back, but I'll just do it live. Do it live on the podcast. He's been asking to come on for years, and so I'm going to throw it over to you now to have that conversation.
Now, we'll just say, I will just preface, could go anywhere. It's my uncle I'm talking about. You know, he's retired now. He mad Footscray Grey supporter, always has been. He's been trying my whole life to get me over to them, and nearly succeeded when I was, you know, 6 to 8 years old, but just didn't. And I had a missed call from him today because I forgot to, well, I won't say I've been avoiding him since the weekend, but he has been asking to come on the show and stuff like that. So I think I'll just call him and I might put it back on him a little bit and just see how we go. I won't tell him, but maybe a bit later.
Young Billy Francini.
G'day, Paul. How are you, mate?
I'm going well. Yourself?
Yeah, going all right. I had a missed call from you. Anything in particular? Or?
No, I just thought you might have just rang me up after the footy last weekend after sprouting so much stuff before that. And say, well done, Dogs.
Well, I wouldn't say I was sprouting anything before that. I did put a photo on with my Essendon Hawaiian shirt, which, you know, I was just showing my colours. I didn't say anything.
That's all right, yeah. And I saw something about saying that Peter Rice is going to kick another 7 goals and be the hero. And I thought he'll never kick 7 goals in his life again.
He might down the local clubs.
Hey?
You might down the local clubs one day.
That day we played him when he kicked 7.
Yeah.
We never had any backman that day.
Yeah. It's all good in hindsight, Paul. I mean, I didn't hear a word out of you until I've got a missed call after the fact.
I just kept quiet, mate, because I tried to keep out of it all. But I thought, it's a support. Really thought they're going to win the game when they just fell in the eight, and the Bulldogs were clearly the best one or two teams for the season. They gave us away pretty early, mate, didn't they? All supporters, all the football public.
Yeah, but what about your supporters calling in SEN all week and saying that they want Bevo's head and all this kind of stuff? They jumped off just as quick as Essendon were confident.
I haven't heard any of that, mate. I'm in Queensland still, mate. I've heard none of that.
So by the way, I do need to let you know, actually, Paul, it's probably unfair of you. You know, you've been wanting to come on the podcast for a while now.
Oh, yeah, you can give me the flick on that, yeah.
Yeah, no, well, I didn't give you the flick, but I'm giving you your chance now. I'm actually talking to you via the podcast.
You're talking to me now on the podcast?
On the podcast. I just want to get you, because I knew that I had a missed call from you. I thought you might be a bit cheeky when I called you back.
Is that what all the noise is in the background?
What noise?
Oh, there's a lot of scratchy noise in the background there.
No, it could be just because you're on loudspeaker. Sorry, but that's right. So you've been pretty lucky. You like walk us through. You managed to accident. If I got this right, you got stuck in Queensland.
Yes.
And then the Doggies Essendon game happened to be in Tassie, and you managed to just fly over the red zone. Did you?
Well, I can't tell fibs, mate. I put that out there because I wanted to stir the possum up, but I didn't actually fly over, no.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I didn't.
That entire time, I thought at least if you win, that at least you're getting rained on like that tomorrow.
No, I put that out there because I was getting peeved off of all this sort of crap that going on the family business service, so I'll just throw that out there. Yeah. But then when I tried to get tickets, the tickets were sold in an hour.
Yeah, that's thanks to Essendon supporters.
And I missed out. And I thought all the Essendon supporters in Tasmania got on and bought tickets. But, mate, they don't know the rules in Tasmania.
They don't?
No, because every time the whistle went and the Bulldogs got a free kick, they booed. Every time we took a mark and had a kick, they booed.
Yeah.
So who teaches them the rules over there?
Oh, that's out of my pay grade. I'm not too sure, Paul. I think it might be just an Essendon thing all around, isn't it?
Well, they did do a lot of booing over there in Tasmania, but I thought the Bulldogs, we had a little bit of kennel cough for a couple of weeks.
Kennel cough, yeah. I like that.
We had a bit of kennel cough for a couple of weeks. We were 10% off our game, and it just took a while to get it back.
Yeah, yeah.
But Dunkley and Treloar, who were playing fantastic footy before they both got injured.
Yeah.
Then that was their best game since they've been back. They've just started to get their mojo back.
Yeah, so you're talking about mojo. You've got, I mean, other than last week, there wasn't much momentum there, but you feel like just that win on the weekend solidifies that confidence. Brizzy, are we confident?
I think we can go all the way to the grand final. Uh-huh. I think Melbourne would be a tough call, but I think we could beat Brisbane Lions.
Yep.
This weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't rate Port Adelaide at all.
Really? You didn't watch them on the weekend?
I did, but I thought Geelong were very, very ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
And Port Adelaide, I've seen them a few times, and I reckon... But when they beat us a couple of weeks ago, it was only one player that beat us. And he's as old as you. He's as old as me.
I was going to say, I'm not that old, mate. I'm in my prime.
He's as old as me, the bloke who beat us. And we weren't playing very well.
Yeah.
So, we've got our mojo back. They've got to maintain that. I think they can.
Yeah.
When they lost Bruce, it really took the stuffing out of them. It took a bit of time to get over that.
Mm. Well, you seem to be got over it pretty quickly in the scheme of things.
Yeah. We'd like to have him back, but I think the fact that they're just leaving English down the forward line all the time now, basically all the time now, makes a big difference to them.
Yeah, it was a bit of a masterstroke, I thought, letting Draper win those win against the other bloke, and then Timmy English just sort of doing what he needed to do down forward, which I thought was
good move. And look at that! It was that midfielder won the game because we had too many players around the ball all the time, and really you only had Parrish that really held his end up.
Yeah. Yeah,
the others fell off fairly quickly, and that dud we gave you a couple of years ago—he sucks all the time. He just gives up very easy.
Talking about Stringer.
Sorry,
you talking about Stringer?
I'm talking about Stringer, mate. He gives up so easy, mate. He just goes missing very quickly. I didn't think Essendon had a lot, and then after half time, they're pretty disappointing, really.
Yeah. Oh no, definitely no arguments there. So you guys go. Yeah. You truly believe you can go from Tassie then to Brizzy, then if you beat Brizzy, you have to go to Adelaide most likely, and then if you beat Adelaide, you go to Perth,
and then go to Perth. Yep.
And you are confident.
I'm confident we'll get to the grand final. Yes.
I like it, Paul. I love. You've always been confident.
I think Melbourne are a different proposition. We can beat them, but they're a very good side, Melbourne. But I think we'll get through the other two.
Okay. The Port Adelaide, I like your theory, though, but I thought they were spectacular on the weekend. I think they're going to be tough to beat at home.
They will be. They're always tough to beat at home. We beat them there early in the year in Adelaide.
Yep.
When we were playing well. And I think we've got that mojo back. I think we're playing well enough now. And I think Brisbane Lions, I know they'll kick enough goals. Lizard McStay hurts them.
Mm-hmm.
Danaher doesn't play four quarters. And Cameron can beat easily enough.
Okay.
So it's just a matter of making sure we get enough ball out of the middle, but we will. And against Port Adelaide, well, again, they got a reasonable forward line. But I think our blokes will... We'll do okay.
All right. I love it.
Yeah. There you go, mate.
Beautiful. Well said, Paul. It was almost like I told you beforehand that you were going to come on the show. Just always scripted and ready to go, aren't you?
Always ready to go.
Paul, we really appreciate it, mate. Best of luck the weekend from myself and Jake. He can't get in on this chat at the moment. He's spewing because he's got a few questions, but that's all right. Okay. But good luck.
All right. Well, let's just go dogs and let's hope we keep going.
Yeah. No worries, mate.
All right, Benny.
All right. Take care.
See you, pal.
Bye.
Gee, I don't know where to begin unpacking that.
He's a confident
killing
man.
Killing me having to sit here and listen. It's killing me. The blasé approach he's taking to winning both the semi and the prelim.
Yeah.
Melbourne's the only team standing in the way of the flag. Who was he talking about when he said the guy as old as him?
Maybe Dixon, maybe Charlie Dixon.
Okay. Was it Boat? I don't know. Like, was he talking about Port or was he talking about Melbourne early in the year? Okay. Yeah.
Forwards, but.
Boak maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Who knows? He's definitely passionate about the Dogs.
I think the way they won it in 16, the doggy supporters are just, they reckon they can do bloody anything, don't they?
Yeah. And walk on water.
Good luck to them. I do think they'll beat Brisbane this weekend, though, on that note. I reckon they will.
Yeah, tough. But I mean, he's right in what he says. Obviously, the simple logistic is if they stop them scoring goals, but Brisbane being the number one attack, if you do stop them scoring goals, then you will likely beat them. And obviously, McStay out. I'm not sure I agree with it. It's easy enough to stop Charlie Cameron, but again,
on the weekend,
you have to admire his optimism and good luck. Good luck to the Dogs. A couple of things to cover off, Benny. Toby Green, we couldn't go through the show without talking about him. It's definitely lit up the headlines this week, sent straight to the tribunal for umpire contact and was given fair guilty.
Has it been anything more dividing than this?
I mean, the vaccine.
It's up there with the vaccine.
It's very interesting, isn't it? You go from right when it sort of happened and Luke Hodges' post-game interview with him, which was just like he was interviewing his best mate, was so strange.
Definitely the element of you never want to get someone like that rubbed out just from your commentary. And that happens, by the way. The commentators
it just starts off straight away and people go, oh, yeah, maybe it was that. But, I mean, I'm certainly no umpire lover, but you just can't touch him, can you? I then saw that tweet from Tom Bug, which was like, can't touch an umpire, and Heppel's like running past the boundary umpire and put his hand on him.
Both accidentally,
they've gotten each other's way. So if that's how you want to live your existence, then absolutely all power
screen,
to you.
Screenshot should never be used in a court of law.
Yeah. And football. It's also we can't have a serious conversation with you because you just can't, it looked aggressive, it looked forceful enough. There's contact there, and I mean, it shouldn't necessarily be the image that it sets, but unfortunately, when it comes to something like that, it's like if he didn't get suspended, and I think he'll get suspended for more, the AFL are appealing it.
Gil's not done, is he?
No, I think he'll get at least one more week. And I was a bit worried this week because someone who I generally disagree with a lot, Jared Waitley, I feel like he's been really on the money with a lot of his points on 360 on the radio and stuff. And
that's where
I like to check my equilibrium by disagreeing a lot with him. And I feel like he's been spot on with his conversation around the Toby tax that doesn't exist. And then just, you just can't. And the people who say, it doesn't affect the lower levels, like umpires get abused week in, week out, but no one crosses the line. You see kids, you can't in one week be saying how important Eddie Betts is because he kicks goals, and kids go down the park and do the same thing and do it in games and they love celebrating and all that sort of stuff. And say that AFL does that for all the good things and then put your head in the sand and say it doesn't do it for the bad things as well. Like, if Toby Green got a week, there would be next year, fingers crossed, when community footy returned, there'd be people doing it all the time and having to get off and stuff. Like, there would all of a sudden be a lot more of a blurred line. And, you just can't make forceful contact. I thought three was light. I mean... I don't really think this is necessarily a Toby Green thing, to be honest. Like, he was the one who did it, obviously, but it's not like he's done this sort of thing before. It's obviously like a little bit of a brain fade, but because I think, I don't know, I sort of get the feeling that he was stiff to get suspended for that elbow he raised at Dangerfield. Like, it was danger sort of slipped and stuff. I feel like he has been pretty good of late. And seemingly, but people are talking about now it's going to cost him the captaincy and all that sort of stuff. I hope that that's not the case, if that was going to be, if that was a serious discussion. But, yeah, I just feel like three is going to be light on, and that if the AFL, you know, it's almost like, yeah, we'll set up a tribunal and you guys can pretend to be independent, but, like, we're actually going to ream him here.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think that, yeah, absolutely, you just can't touch an umpire. But the thing that sort of drove me out the wall with the Jerry Whateley stuff is that he picks and chooses when he wants to go all out on will somebody think of the children, Maud Flanders type shit. He, like, because this has happened, like, a lot of times. There's been examples in the last two seasons that he hasn't got on his high horse about. So it's like, yes, the issue is there and you need to absolutely stamp that out. But you do kind of feel like, okay, all right, he's a big Geelong supporter too. So he's and he is such a vocalist in the AFL world. He's on 360. He's got his own show. He takes up a lot of coverage. And then he's basically, his job, I think, is to persuade people to his point of view, and he's very good with his vocabulary and all that, so you know you can't argue with him. So he's right, but I also think, like, well, why aren't you on your high horse every week about that sort of thing? Whereas he just, I don't like the bloke at all, because I just think he's such a nerd. He's just a squirmy little nerd, if you ask me.
And I think that in retrospect to, like, the Lachie Neale one, where he got a fine when he tapped the umpire to try and alert him that he had blood on him. Mm. I think he was saying, well, I got taken too high, look at my head, and then was like, well, you got sent off. But he, like, sort of hit his arm as if to draw attention to it. And it's like, I know that, you know, it's footy and everything's, you know, like, you lose yourself in the moment stuff, but...
But there's a grey area already.
So he's choosing.
You're stamping it out. Like, you don't.
Yeah. So, like, it's not as if, you know, like, the umpire's throwing the ball up and, like, he's running back and you are late to move and you just sort of just brushing him away. You're trying to take. Like, if you're choosing to initiate contact with the umpire in that sense of, hey, look at this, or intimidating.
Yeah.
Then. I mean, now in retrospect, that I think Lachie Neale was really, really lucky, and that, yeah, I think Toby will get more than three. But I think that, I mean, it's obviously been spoken about a lot, and by the time that you might listen to this, they might know the verdict of the appeal. But
it'll be more than three, just because as soon as Gil puts what he thinks of the thing in the media as well, then it's like, well, he doesn't stand a chance, does he? Like,
yeah, not it's going to be. But
if you are going to go down the rabbit hole of that, then you also need to have a complete overhaul and go, well, I'm not saying for a second that any umpire ever deserves to be touched or anything like that. But if we talk about the relationship between umpires and the footballers themselves, then you've got to ask, okay, like, is this the most professional environment both ways to begin with? And I don't think it is. There's calling by first names, nicknames. Raise it up. They all do it. If we're gonna actually be like stamping out the whole thing, then they need to be like, all right, well, don't. I think they should be called by their numbers. If I just have this issue with them all being buddies, but then, like, if that's misconstrued ever, and then it's sort of like a touch one way, where it was from a buddy perspective, and that's misconstrued in the media, and then it turns out they're playing Geelong the next week and Jared Whateley gets on his high horse about that bloke too. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a slippery slope. So I think you need to actually can the whole thing and actually say, well, umpires should be calling them by their numbers. It should be, and the patronising, there's a lot of, I think the whole relationship between those two parties needs to change, and it's not just one way.
It's interesting that, I mean, I've never really given that too much thought about that, but I've always thought that they coach them too much on the field anyway. Like, just their umpire, what you see, not, you know, like, don't stop people from doing things, or don't, you know, like,
yeah,
let the people make their decisions and umpire based on that. Not like, oh, don't do that, or stop there. Like, obviously, you've got to set marks and things like that. But if people want to push and shove and throw each other to the ground or whatever it is, like, you umpire what happens, not
yeah,
get involved locally. But I mean, we could, I mean, talking wrestling support, we could talk about umpires all day. So we won't even get into Cody Waitman and find out what you messaged him on the weekend.
Nah, that really disheartened me. I hate it when it happens.
It's gross behaviour, isn't it? I mean, it's right. not to sit here and say that he's not the first player in the world to receive that, whatever. And then
in the heat of the time, I was fuming as well at him. But like, you do that four times a game with other players too. But I think it's just the fact that he got that many frees and they turned into goals. It just doesn't sit well with you. But that's that stuff. You like, I don't have to come on here and be like that and have to not condone it. But you feel like you have to, and it's just like,
it's just the worst.
We're not all like that. I think footy's so Australia wide now that you have your different groups within every single team. Like,
100%. And I mean, a good mate of mine has always spoken to me about like the Nuffy percentage, and he's a Collingwood fan, and he's like, everyone always says referrals and we're Nuffies and stuff, but he goes, we've got more fans than everyone, so our Nuffy percentage is higher.
100%.
And so, you know, like GWS who don't have as many fans, like, yeah, they've still got Nuffies, but they're not as vocal, and they're not, because they don't have as many people supporting them. I mean, you have to be in a pretty ordinary place yourself, don't you, to be like messaging a player like death threats or whatever. Like,
that's where it really comes from, isn't it?
Gambling, right. And you know, like, and yeah, win and lose. It's even just going to the footy and abusing people like that is a bit
how old are you, mate?
The last thing on our list to talk about here, Ben, and is the coaching game. So we did touch on the fact that, you know, if Geelong lose this weekend, is there a decision there for Chris Scott? What's happening on the Gold Coast with Stuart Dew? Not really sure if that's being that seat's being warmed for Clarko. Collingwood have appointed Craig McRae, which was interesting because I guess I thought Collingwood would go for a biggish name. I mean, they tend to do so. And I thought that, I mean, they've obviously gone through a really proper process, and maybe it's, you know, who Craig McRae can bring in, set up alongside him. You read Justin Leppich is going to go there in some sort of role, and he's obviously really highly sought after too. And then Michael Voss is floating around. What does he then, you know, is he going to then go and like be the list manager? Like, he's obviously a senior assistant at Port Adelaide at the moment, but is he going to transition into that? And then all of a sudden, you know, you've got three of Brisbane's premiership core coaching there, and then coaching, you know, you start to
also coaching the team that they punished.
Yeah, so that's interesting, and I think it's a pretty smart appointment. You know, McRae's was a coach his own team at VFL level, and has been in a few different systems, so it's good to see someone like that who I think has been in there for a while and land a big job. So you've got to think that he's obviously going to be under pressure, everyone who coaches a team like Collingwood is, but it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. And of course, the other big the big coaching question or appointment to be at the moment is the Carlton one, and if you believe what you read, Ross Lyon is the heavy favourite, and I'm not sold myself, Ben.
Do you think, if I asked you 3 weeks ago, or actually 2 weeks ago, it sounds like Carlton supporters were more sold, but I think there's been some words that he's had, that he said in the media recently, that I reckon has not done himself favours. I think Gross is, I think he's been great in the media, and I think it's been good for his chances getting back into coaching, because it shows that the whole public that this guy's clearly, his footy IQ is through the roof. The way he talks about football, it's just like, oh, he's on another level. Like, he puts the other special comments guys just to shame. But why don't you think he's...
It just gives me Mouldhouse flashbacks a little bit.
yeah.
I don't feel like... Yeah, I feel like he would then coach to prove to people that he can still coach okay, but then at any minute he can walk away and knows that he's got his media career, he's got all this stuff that he can fall back on. He's at an age where... You know, like, he's not trying to build a career for himself, and maybe that'll be a good thing. But I think that there's obviously, you know, he's pretty highly rated by the people that he's coached. So, you know, I can't stand here and say that Nick Riewoldt and Matthew Pavlich are wrong, and, you know, like, all this sort of stuff. Like, because he obviously does build pretty strong connections, and maybe that sort of tough love might be what Carlton needs, and that sort of old school maybe approach. But I'd personally be far more confident with Buckley if they were to put him through the process. I feel like You know, I don't know if there's still that Collingwood Carlton sort of thing in his mind, or if he wants to be the senior coach. Feels like he's had an under the radar break since he's moved on from Collingwood, got sacked from Collingwood, and he might have been able to like get that break away from the game. And I mean, but again, he could step into a media role and earn hundreds of thousands of dollars a year and you know, take the stress out of his life. But I feel like he'd be a really good appointment. I feel like he's got like a good mix of new and old school, and seemingly, again, from the extreme outside, builds relationships and, you know, personal connections, whilst then also, you know, being hard and fair and but just really up to date with the modern game. And the other one that...
would have done some soul connection too in the last few months, by the way.
Yeah, and just a time to sort of take a deep breath and, and maybe another club be good for him. But, yeah, I mean, he's also a really good fit, I think, for the Gold Coast if they can't get Clarko up there. But I have heard, and it's not, you know, major mail or anything that I'd put my hat on, is that Clarkson is still well within Carlton's sights, despite him saying through his manager he won't be coaching next year and he'll have a break.
Before you go on, everything you've just said about why you don't think Ross is a good fit, you're now excited about the prospect of Clarkson.
I'm still Buckley. Buckley's my number one preference to coach Carlton next year, and then Clarkson in behind him. I've got a little bit of a worry about Clarkson at the Hawks over the last few years, but I'm willing to sort of put that down to the fact that I don't think he has any relationship with the CEO. Him and the president obviously hate each other. Like, there was enough moving there that it wasn't working. But the old thing with Clarko is that whenever they win, it's a coaching masterpiece, and whenever they lose, the list is no good and it's not really his fault anyway. So that would be nice at Carlton. The little sort of, I guess, word, and again, it's not from anything that I would be overly putting my name to, but is that despite the fact he has said that he's taking a break next year, is that Carlton are not sold on that and that they're going to continue to get him. So if that does come to fruition, we'll replay this, but if not, probably no point.
It never happened. Well,
from my perspective,
I can see Carlton just losing all the fishes at the same time and then ending up asking David Teague if he wants to come back.
Wouldn't that be something? I hope he finds another job. Teague, he seems like a nice
guy. Me too, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, Ben, we'll close out just with some tips. Week two of the final series.
How did we go last week? I reckon we were about even. About two apiece, I think.
I think I got... two, yes, I did get two. I got, because I took the Cats.
Yeah, I had Port and the D's, I think.
Yeah, I had the D's and the Dogs.
We both went the Swans, did we?
Yeah, it must have.
And I reckon they match up better against the Cats, just because my...
Yeah, although the Giants did beat, when they were heavily undermanned, did beat the Cats down the... but yeah, I think that thanks to the Wild... elimination straight sets facing.
So who we got? What do we got?
The Cats on Friday night versus GWS. I'm Cats.
I'm going GWS and
Toby
to kick one from outside the oval in the playground.
I'm going Cats big. I think 25 plus is gonna
happen
there. And then Saturday night, Brisbane Lions versus the Bulldogs at the Gabba.
I'm with my Uncle Paul on this one. I reckon the Doggies are gonna beat Brisbane.
No, I can't. And
straights again.
I can't see him losing at the Gabba, to be honest.
I think the mix stays at
the Lions, that is. Yeah, he is, but it's a different kettle of fish up there. It's an incredible sort of setup, and the way that they play up there, I feel like, I don't disagree with what Paul was talking about. I don't think it's a pool at the moment. I think that it is like a viewing deck. I've actually been on the pool deck there for a game of cricket. I didn't go in the pool because you should have seen like the film of sunscreen that was across the top of it. But
yeah, I bet it wasn't sunscreen if everyone's in there all day.
It was really yucky. good seat. Yeah, really good seat. Really good spot to watch sport from. But it's behind the goals for footy, I'm pretty sure. So I don't think they can have a pool there when it's footy season, just to make sure that the ball doesn't get all wet.
I'd watch it.
There is like a sort of an alfresco viewing area. I think the Lions will be too good there. Hey, two weeks in a row, Ben. Thanks for chatting. thanks to Uncle Paul as well for joining us. And thanks to everyone who tuned in last week and got us around us on the socials. Please feel free to do so again. And rate the podcast on all your services and give us a follow at @TheMagoos_. And, of course, we're still, always, as always, we're searching for sponsors or small business plugs as well. We're sort of happy to do. If you want to chat to a couple of hundred people, we reach them directly. So if you're in the area and you'd like that, I guess, just let us know and we'll give you a plug. Benny, yes. Enjoy.
You too, mate. It's been a pleasure.
The Magoos. The Magoos. The Magoos. The Magoos. The Magoos.